Hi there, listeners of the Accents podcast on WUKY. My name is Katerina Stoikova. I am the host, and this episode has been brought to you by Accents Publishing, an independent press for brilliant voices. Today, we have a brilliant writer with a brand new book, and she's joining us all the way from Salt Lake City, Utah, Lisa Groen. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
My pleasure, and also congratulations on the publication of your first novel, The Cassatt Sisters, a novel of love and art. What's it like to write a historical novel? Tell us about the constraints and the freedoms of writing a historical novel.
Well, I had never written one before, nor any novel. So, the origin story for this novel came from going to an exhibit of female impressionists when I lived in Germany. There was one in Frankfurt. And I didn't even know that there were female impressionists at the time, which is a little embarrassing to admit now. But when I was there, I got acquainted with Mary Cassatt's work, and this was probably more than it was probably close to 18 years ago. And so I was really curious about her, and so I really wanted to learn more about her as an American. She was our only American Impressionist painter, and I knew her primarily from her artwork of mothers and children, which a lot of people do know her primarily for. That's really her expertise. And I think she does an amazing job of capturing that bond of mothers and children. I went back and looked at a timeline of her artwork. I put it all on a timeline. And where I became fascinated by her was her early years, the first painting she did prior to being invited to join the Impressionists, and then through the time that the Impressionists actually disbanded. So my novel takes place between 1877 and 1886, so 9 years. I really started with her artwork, and what I saw through the artwork was maybe a younger woman's longings and joie de vivre. And I noticed the bright color she used and the freedom she seemed to exhibit in her paintings. And I saw the love for her sister, who was one of her primary models at the time. But I began to wonder too if there were perhaps a romantic love behind the scenes. And so that's when I went to her biography and began to look at the facts. But I would say that it was an art first novel, it was ekphrastic in that way.
It's an ekphrastic novel. It's a historical novel, but it's also a love story that is speculative in nature, meaning that you believe there was a love story there. Tell us more.
Sure. So after I went to her biography, I became aware that the person who invited her to join the Impressionist was someone whose work she admired very much. Reportedly, she saw Edgar Degas' work and thought to herself, I am seeing something, a direction in which maybe my own artwork can go. Mary had been living and painting in Paris and other parts of Europe for 11 years. She actually came to America from Philadelphia at the age of 22 after the Civil War to become a fine artist, which is just incredible that a young woman at that time would have that kind of confidence and drive and ambition and direction. At any rate, she was educated in the academic traditions of the time, although she could not attend L'École des Beaux-Arts, which was the premier art school in Paris, because women were not yet admitted. She took instruction from tutors, and also she was a copyist in the Louvre, which is kind of a gateway for fine artists to study the master painters. But she grew tired of that, tradition, and she wanted some more freedom, and I think she saw that in Edgar Degas' work. So they worked closely together after he invited her to join the Impressionist Collective. And they worked together on a magazine called Night and Day, which is a magazine of prints. And their original intention was to take the Impressionist style and kind of circulate it through a magazine throughout parts of Europe to generate interest in the art of the Impressionists. And so Mary learned the art of printmaking side by side with him, and also Camille Pissarro and Berthe Morisot. And so in my imagination, I just imagined these artists working so closely together, side by side, and then what might have developed from there. There is some speculation that they had a relationship, a romantic relationship, but we have no letters that exist between the two artists anymore. There was speculation during the time, and some art historians still speculate today, but no one knows. So it's all, this is really imaginative for sure.
What is missing is just as indicative as what is present.
Yes, I think that's right. And it makes for fertile ground for fiction. I'm not the first person to imagine this, you know, in fiction, but I saw it a very specific way.
This book is a feminist book by its nature. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would. I would call her a feminist, and she would not probably have called herself a feminist. But in terms of her work, if we look at paintings from that time, it's very rare to see a woman's point of view as an artist. And her models, they are women who are not merely decorative. They are busy, they are reading, they're going to the opera, particularly from that time. Although Lydia was her primary model, we see Lydia doing all kinds of handwork. And if the models are sitting, they're often engaged in thought. You can see them. Sometimes they're bored. Sometimes you wonder, why are they bored? You know, what is it about that time? Are they, it seems as though she's trying to capture the reality of women, even during that time, which is different than other artists during that time. Because she got on that steamer at the age of 22 to become a fine artist and to have a career. I mean, this was something that was exceptional. Her ambition, as a woman was also exceptional. So I think not only in the expression of her own art, but also her paintings represent what you're seeing, I think, as a woman with her own mind and sensibilities.
Would you read the epigraph to the book?
Sure. So this is from Marie, and I'm going to pronounce her name incorrectly, probably, but I will do my best. Deremes. She's a French feminist, a proclaimed French feminist from 1828 to 1884. She was also friends with Camille Pissarro. So I imagine perhaps she may have brushed shoulders with Mary too. She says, "The door which you have opened to me will not be closed behind me, and a whole legion shall follow me."
Can you speak to the significance of this artist's work that helped other female artists after her?
That it was even possible, that's one thing. Mary, as I mentioned, in spite of the fact that she was not able to attend the same art school, hired professors in their off hours to teach her, apprenticed with fine artists in Paris. There were other women there, you know, painting and learning with different people, but they weren't doing it as a profession. And Mary actually supported herself in her lifetime as an artist, and also as a curator of art and an advisor on to others on which paintings to buy at the time. She was very responsible for bringing Impressionist art into America as well. So if we think about the way that people work today, she had the side hustle of also being an art consultant in addition to being a painter. So she had a business mind for sure. And I'll just say that what I discovered is at this time in the 1880s, she could not have had opened, I think, a bank account by herself or made deposits or made withdrawals by herself. I mean, this is the, and the right to vote did not come in France till eight or till 1945, which was very late compared to America. You know, she was part of the suffrage movement later in her life, helping in America with that. So she very much saw that women had their own minds and agency and should be considered full citizens.
Mary and Edgar, assuming they had a relationship, it was one that was more delicate, right? Although people speculated, there was no scandal or anything around it. It just makes me think of Camille Claudel and Auguste Rodin and that movie that I've watched about 10 times, and I cry my eyes out every time I watch it, about what happened to her and how that relationship destroyed her. What do you think? Do you have any thoughts about this question slash not question?
Yes. I've seen that movie too. I loved that movie. And I watched that movie while I was writing too, just because I wanted to get the feeling of what that might have been like, that complete terror, really. What if you were to get pregnant at that time? As a woman, unmarried, and Mary had a certain social standing too, I think. It would have devastated her family. I think the reason, this is what I would guess, the reason why Mary may have been able to survive an affair where her heart was so broken, and avoid that kind of reputational disaster was possibly because she had her family nearby. They came to France right at the time she was invited to join the Impressionists, and Lydia, her sister, was her closest companion. Her parents made it possible for her to live and work without the domestic responsibilities. They helped with her financial responsibilities. They made it possible for her to be an artist purely. And my guess is that familial support not only helped her succeed, but also helped her survive if she did have a broken heart, particularly Lydia, who would have been so close to her and was likely with her in all of those circles too. That's my guess. And that's what I wrote into the story too.
Was it difficult? So many years working on it and thinking about it and writing it?
Thank you for asking that question. So I started it at a time when it was possible for me to write full time. And I personally, in my life, I had some changes. I got a divorce. I was a single mom for a while. I rebuilt a career, a corporate career, in order to support us. And I put it on a back burner for a long time. But I always thought about it. And I would go back and I think I would say I would reread it and dabble, but really just kind of kept this very small flame kind of going. I didn't do a ton on it until I ended up leaving my corporate job sometime in COVID. I had the privilege and the ability to do that. And I went back to it, and it was like keeping a promise to myself to finish it. And I have felt like Mary's advocate for many years in some ways for that reason. So it was a delight to finish it. And I'm so glad that it's out of my hands now. Honestly, that's how it feels. Just pure joy.
It is beautifully produced with
Oh.
color paintings inside. How did that happen? Publishers would
Thank you.
rarely agree to do that, I think.
Thank you so much for saying that. So, the print edition, actually, they're in black and white. The paintings are in the public domain now. which makes it easier to do something like that. And I felt I tried to look at it both ways. Could I write this novel without incorporating the paintings? I could, but the paintings become part of the story in my novel. So to have them to look at while you're reading it just felt like it made a lot more sense. And my publisher gratefully was glad to put them in.
Did the sisters teach you anything about your own life?
I have two sisters, and so I'm the oldest. I understand sister relationships, but when I looked at Mary and Lydia's relationship, I can't help but think that Lydia gave a lot of her life to Mary at the end of her life by being her model, which would have been, would have meant hours sitting for her. And also being there for her to develop her career, that was in some ways an act of love. I mean, it really was an act of love for Lydia. She had lost her fiance in the Civil War, and so she never married herself. And I can only imagine that they planned to live a long life, together as sisters in Paris, because Mary did not marry herself. So I think of her as a great support to Mary and an inspiration, really, to Mary, and vice versa, too.
Can you speak about the thread of motherhood in Mary's work and your own writing?
Yes, I really think when it comes to Mary, it's the familial bonds that, as I mentioned before, really strengthened her and I think inspired her artwork even before she came upon her expertise, the eventual subject matter she would be known for, mothers and children. She was drawn to paint children. She was drawn to paint sisters. She was drawn, whether they were children or adult sisters. She was drawn to paint her mother, her father, her brother, her nieces and nephews. And I think that they being at home gave her a tremendous amount of joy. I would also say that motherhood at the time was portrayed in art in almost a religious way, an idealistic way, even. And Mary captured the work of motherhood. And sometimes that work can be beautiful, and sometimes that work can be really hard. Like sometimes you see it in the bathing paintings she does. The toddler is probably trying to get out of the mother's arms, and the mother's just trying to get the job done. She captured captures the work of motherhood, I think, in a beautiful way. The real work.
What was it like to live with the characters?
I mean, it was a delight to imagine these impressionist painters who were very avant-garde for their time. We tend to think about their paintings as so beautiful and maybe not even too edgy, right? But at the time, they were our first modern artists. So this idea of being somewhat rebellious during this time and the tremendous freedom in the loose brushstrokes, the bright colors, just breaking out of the box of what was traditional painting. I thought that that must have been such an exciting time, paired with the time of La Belle Époque, which was a time of tremendous cultural in every field. Then also innovation in terms of electricity coming online and all of these different inventions. So you have like the society that is moving very quickly forward in a different way, and art kind of kept pace with that as well. I think that's exciting. That was fun to live with them.
Well, your novel is a novel of love and art, two of the most important things in life. Tell us about coming up with the title. I love how you raised the stakes right there in the title.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I went through quite a few different subtitles. Most novels say a novel. And I thought, well, I'd like to add a little bit more descriptor there. I thought about what it was. I see it as a double love story with the sisters and with Edgar and Mary, and then art, of course.
Would you please read us an excerpt?
Oh, I'd be happy to. So, this is an excerpt from when Mary and Edgar are beginning to fall in love, and they are walking in the dark in the Tuileries. My eyes grew accustomed to the dark. On the left bank of the Seine, along a tree-lined quay, he caught my hand. In the night, we walked together, the river rippling with light from distant electric street lamps. The government had commissioned the Lumiere, more plentiful than ever, to cast Paris in eternal light. Edgar snickered at the vanity of the lamps, the way they obscured the light of the moon and stars. The government should concern itself with its own enlightenment, he scoffed. But there were still shadows where lovers could meet, pockets of safe cover, benches, the quays, under leafy branches in the Tuileries. In that garden, bathed in soft light, the trees cast shadows of thin branches on the ground. Leaves cushioned our footsteps, falling even as we walked along the sandy path. Sweet autumn clematis climbed along a garden trellis, filling the cool night air with its perfume. I took long breaths, delighted by the fragrance. I could paint this, I said, stopping. I'd set up my easel under this tree and paint until dawn. Think of the natural scenes left unpainted by women, simply because it's dark outside. He laughed. Truly, imagine someone gazing at Pissarro's cityscapes, judging his sense of decency in painting buildings cast in twilight, or worse, moonlight. I'm trying to imagine that, Mary. I frowned at him. He laughed again. No, really, I am. You're not constricted. You can't imagine. Edgar grasped my hand and led me to a cluster of metal chairs. He pulled two aside, and we sat in the open air under the stars. Other than painting the night sky, Mary, what else are you missing? You're as educated as any artist in Paris. Critics esteem your work. He sounded like my father, but worse, listening to him confused me. I felt embarrassed and ungrateful. Hadn't I attained a pinnacle of professionalism with the Impressionists? I had an audience. What was this yearning I'd felt as long as I could remember? I want what you have. I want full freedom.
Wow, gorgeous writing. Thank you for
Oh.
reading us a little bit from the book, Lisa. So, is publishing a novel different than publishing a book of essays?
Oh, yes. I think writing a novel is much harder for me. I had written short stories before, but writing a novel was a huge undertaking, and I struggled with structure at first, and did a lot of seam ripping and putting it back together again, kind of like sewing a garment, particularly the beginning of the book. But I was happy finally to get there, or get there as far as I could anyway.
Did you ever have moments or periods of time when you thought that you'll give up or you'll never be able to finish it?
Yeah, I mean, of course, one has doubts the whole way through. And even now, I don't, Edgar Degas often said that a painting is never done, just abandoned. And I think that about writing too. There's still, I'm sure it could be better, but at some point you do have to let go. You do the best you can and let it go. But the doubt, of course, especially holding it for so long. And but I knew I wanted to do it, and it really was like a promise I kept to myself, and I'm grateful to have done it, and I hope to do it again.
You hope to do it again? Do you have a project already?
I don't have a fully kind of formed project in my mind, but I am thinking about, I went to the National Portrait Gallery in Washington, D.C. a couple years ago and loved that gallery. And in fact, I think Mary Cassatt's painting by Edgar Degas is there at that portrait gallery, if I'm not mistaken. one of them. And I'm really curious about the arts in America during the 1940s. And I don't have a lot more than that, but I know that they were supported by the government at the time. There were more, there were more public programs to support the arts. And I'm really curious how they may have flourished as a result. But I have a lot more research to do, and who knows? But that is sort of where my next curiosity is taking me.
Did you enjoy living in Germany?
I really did. I think Germany is a beautiful country. It was so green and lush. And I live in Utah now, which is much more dry. And I was about 4 hours to France, to Paris, 4 hours by train to Paris. So I could go and go to the, great museums. And I was in a small village when I lived in Germany. So to be able to travel like that and see Europe, I had little kids at the time, a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old when we first moved there. And then I lived there for 5 years. So I was a full-time mom, but I did get to travel and I loved it.
And you're the author of The Mother's Book of Well-being.
Yes.
Tell us about that book.
Yeah, sure. So I wrote that when I was a new mom because I was looking at the time. So that was published more than 20 years ago. And I was looking at the time for a book for myself so that I may not lose who I was as a woman, as a creative person, in spite of becoming a mother. Just sort of, it's a book for holding on to yourself when you're so consumed with late nights and taking care of other people, of children. That's what it's really about.
And for the listeners of Accents, Lisa and I know each other from the MFA program that we both attended. Please tell us how you chose to go to Spalding MFA.
Oh, yeah. So I was looking for a brief residency program. I lived in Germany at the time, so I knew I needed a program where I could fly in for residencies and study part-time and then work from home most of the time. I did a big search for the programs I thought I might be interested in, and I selected a handful. And when it came down to it, Spalding was one of those programs. And ultimately, I have to admit that I chose it because my favorite author at the time, Wendell Berry, lived in Kentucky. And that is why I ended up there, truly, just because he lived in the state. And I thought, just by proximity, it might, some of that talent and inspiration may rub off on me in some way while I was there for those residencies. And the funny thing is that I, as unlikely as it sounds, I'm so glad I chose Spalding for so many different reasons. But Wendell Berry was in the audience of one of the public readings at my first residency, and the poet, who is amazing in his own right, W.S. Merwin. And Katerina, were you there at that residency?
No, that was the year before I joined,
Ah,
unfortunately. Yeah.
okay. Well, he was amazing too, and his reading of poetry. But Wendell Berry came because they were contemporaries, and so he was in the audience. And I had a new classmate who was in my workshop with me at that residency, and his mother knew Wendell Berry, and he said, "I'll introduce you," because I was completely fangirling in the audience, like, "There he is, here I am, and there he is." And so he introduced me to him, and I could not be more starstruck than if I were meeting a Beatle. Like if George Harrison himself had been there, I mean, that is how I felt. I could barely speak. I was so excited. And he was lovely, and he's very tall. And he was very kind, and I ended up buying a lot of my classmates drinks at the bar at the Brown Hotel after, which is where we stay when we're in Kentucky at those residencies for Spalding.
And you mentioned George Harrison, and I happen to know that you have a family member who is named George Harrison. Tell us more.
Yes, I have a Schnauzer poodle named George Harrison, and he's about 14 pounds, and he's actually well known in our neighborhood, and we'll be walking, and people won't know our names, but they will yell, "George Harrison," from across the street. So it's really cute. He's famous in his own right.
You come from a literary family. Tell us about your grandmother, Genevieve.
Yes, thank you for mentioning her. Genevieve St. Cyr is her pen name. She is a found or was a founding member of the Utah Poets Society here in Salt Lake City. I just attended one of their readings recently, in fact, and she was so influential on me as a girl before I even knew I wanted to write. She was correcting my English and teaching me about the etymology of words, and she had an education in both Latin and Greek, and she spoke French. Her family was French Canadian, and so she had this breadth of language, and understood words in a way that I still don't understand words. But having a grandmother like that was hugely supportive and helpful, finally, of when I did want to be a writer. She was great. I think grandparents are so helpful. My grandpa, too, was really supportive of me and would say things to me like, before I even, thought about publishing, I was, working in the world, and I would write these little things and send them to him. And they would be so great, supportive. And he would say, "Lisa, you will be writing one day." He would just say things like that. So just a very important people to me. This photo back here is my grandmother, if you could see
Wow,
her. Yeah.
that is wonderful.
And
That's
she was a
great
young
to have her
mother.
presence in this conversation.
Yes.
You
Yes.
know, for decades of our lives, that's all we need for someone to encourage us.
It's so true. It is so true. And it reminds me to be encouraging of other people too when I have the opportunity as a writer.
Well, now we do have an opportunity to encourage the listeners of Accents. What would you like to encourage them on?
Oh gosh, just keep writing. I write in a journal every day, and I've heard people say to me, "Journal writing is different than writing for publishing." And maybe that's true in terms of how much you have to revise and polish it before you publish something. But the creative process is the same. The working out of an idea is the same. And so I think to honor that creativity in oneself is really important.
Thank you so much, Lisa. And best of luck with the new book and all your writing. And I hope I see you again in not too distant future.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you about all of this, Katerina.